And now, you're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
This is the RBLR Rays podcast. My name is Zach. His name is Pat. And Pat, one of the most exciting and maybe consequential weeks of Rays baseball and like franchise existence. What a week it was.
Yeah. I mean, when you talk about Rays history, this is a week of that will go into the history books. Like, we'll talk about 1998. We'll talk about 2008. We'll probably talk about last year, but for like the wrong reasons in terms of like playing in Steinbrenner. We'll talk about, but then also the changing of the guard from Stu Sternberg to the current ownership group. And now we'll also be talking about the hopefully security of the Rays long-term in Tampa Bay, which is like what everyone needed for the past, 15 years?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, we have talked so much about the stadium on this show, and I have gotten very tired of having to talk about it. And it feels like this is truly the end of that sort of that chapter of uncertainty, of frustration, of like lack of clarity, and maybe the opening of a new chapter in Rays baseball. And it's coinciding with an unbelievable week on the field for the team, with amazing performances from really important players who are going to be a big part of this postseason for us, what is shaping up to be a potential division winning season, hopefully a deep postseason run season. There's just a lot going on right now. It's a great time to be a Rays fan, and we are very glad to have you all here talking ball with us. If this is your first time joining, if you saw the news about the stadium, you wanted to hear more about the Rays, you wanted to dive a little bit deeper, we're so glad you're here. Thank you for joining us. If you are returning, we appreciate you guys coming back. Do us a huge favor. If you check and see if you are subscribing on YouTube, if that's what you're watching us on, or if you're on Twitter or wherever else you're watching us on, just check that you're following. It'll let you know when we're going live, when we're ready to talk some ball with you guys. And we'd love for you guys to join us by dropping comments so we can hear what you guys have to say, because I know y'all do. But Pat, let's end the mystery of what our first topic is going to be, as if there ever was one. All signs are pointing to all roadblocks have been removed, city approval, county approval. It appears that the Rays are getting a new stadium at the Hillsborough College site, and we rejoice.
Yes. It's been a funny old week. It's one of those times where I never expected to be doing this with my life, but me sitting in my home in England, getting up Tampa Council meeting live streams and Hillsborough County live streams as well. I learned a lot about local US governments. I don't know if we saw the most shining example of that on display in that live stream. Do they always throw such snide remarks at each other in their closing statements?
I would say that's not necessarily the way it always has been, but it definitely is how it has been recently.
Yeah. Yeah, because I can't remember names now, but there was one member that upset another member. I think the second member was someone young, and she essentially was like, "I do not appreciate your tone, madam." Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Ooh, spicy stuff." And also, does everything always take this long in a meeting? Because I think the live stream started at 12 Eastern, and the vote didn't happen till like 5:30.
Things taking their time in American politics is definitely, definitely on brand. So that was not a surprise to me.
Yeah. But what I will say, it was really great to see and really kind of heartwarming to see the amount of public comment that took place in those meetings, the amount mm-hmm. of people that showed up for the team and like shared some quite moving stories about what the Rays have meant to them and the community and their families and things like that. I think in the Hillsborough meeting, Ken Hagen talked about his dad and how he wanted to be the one to help the Rays out for his father's sake. And he felt very privileged to do that. Yeah. So, you know, it was really interesting. And I think there were interesting debates about whether or not it is ethical to use taxpayer money to fund a billionaire's stadium. I think those are all completely healthy debates. And I think it's right to have healthy discourse about that. But I also think at the end of the day, the main thing that needs to happen is the Rays need to stay in Tampa. And that's what happened. For anyone that doesn't know, there were two votes passed, one on Thursday, one on Friday. The Tampa Council on Thursday narrowly actually voted 4-3 in favor of it passing. And then the Hillsborough County, slightly less close, it was 5-2. And there were a couple of like, yeah, we're passing this, but we want to see X and Y down the line to get this vote. But the main thing is that the votes have passed. And like you said, the roadblocks seemingly are removed. I think the Rays already have everything lined up to begin the project. And I've been hearing that shovels are going to be in the ground. Construction is going to get started late September, early October kind of time.
Yeah. Ken Babby was on with Doug Wechter and Dwayne during, I believe, the game on that Friday, talking about, it was either the Friday or the Saturday, I'm not sure. But they were on there talking about kind of the next steps forward. And that was definitely what they're intimating. And some of that maybe because they want to prevent any dissenting opinions from being voiced on the stadium construction from folks who don't appreciate maybe the way the public funding is being used. That's a little bit above my pay grade, if I'm being completely honest, to know all the dynamics there. But specifically as a Rays fan, I'm just very excited that we have gone from the days of Split City, of, you know, starting to talk about Nashville, and like, and we have left that behind, it appears. And we are now discussing the ballpark in Tampa. And I will say, I have been to the Battery, which is that's the thing that is being referenced frequently when talking about this new stadium complex, is because it's not just the stadium. It's the idea that of developing the stadium and the area around it to be a place to be. And the Battery is definitely the sort of blueprint that they're looking at there. And I have to say, having gone there several times, because it's the closest stadium to me where I live, I see why they want to replicate that. It is a happening place to be even when there isn't a game. People are going and hanging out there instead of going to the game sometimes because they would rather watch on a screen or whatever. It's a very bustling place to be. And I understand 100% why the ownership group wants to sort of replicate that. And so I'm very excited to see where this all goes. The way that the renderings look is very exciting. It was also nice to hear, just reiterated that like we are going to still keep the climate controlled and climate protected nature of what the Trop brings with this new stadium, which I mean, that was the assumption. And based on the designs and everything, we would assume that, but it was nice to hear it re-emphasized because that is something that if you're watching a baseball game in Florida, it's, I don't think you could do anything but a completely climate controlled stadium because it would just be brutal out there watching baseball games and playing baseball games out there. I still got questions like what the material on the field is going to be. Because that's something I've said on this podcast many times, is I am very much concerned with the quality of the material for the field, because I believe that can shorten careers, especially for outfielders and for even some infielders, depending on how much they're on the grass. And so that's something that I'm going to be watching closely as the development comes along. But at the end of the day, I'm just so excited for the future of the team, for what this could mean going forward. And as we look at the team chasing a division, chasing a deep playoff run, what all this positive momentum going forward with the stadium now, and then with maybe a really deep playoff run, what that positive momentum could bring to this team and to the ownership group. Just very exciting time to be a Rays fan.
100%. Like, you can imagine, you know, Junior Caminero bringing in this new era, opening day 2029, I believe is the is the kind of projected opening
date.
That's
the idea. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, with that comes other things as well. I mean, the Rays often get, you know, the common things to degrade the Rays from elsewhere are you've got no fans, your stadium's a dump, right? We can contest both of those things. I think we have fans, but it will be way easier for fans to get to the stadium when they're in Tampa proper instead of in St. Petersburg. Again, correct me if I'm wrong, as I am not a local, but I don't think you have to cross that horrible bridge anymore.
Right, that would be the idea.
Yeah, and you know, we know the Raymond James gets packed out, and I don't think it's that far away from that, right? And the Lightning Stadium always full as well. So Tampa have fans and can flock to the stadium. It's just going to be in a way more convenient location for them to do that, and that should see boosts in attendance. And also, it's almost as if the baseball gods chimed in. I think on Friday's game, it could be immediately after the vote, where Xander Bogaerts hit the catwalk and controversially got himself out. I was like, I will miss some of these things that the Trump does. Maybe we should put some catwalks in the new stadium just to, as an homage to... Yeah, yeah. Just as a little, you know, let's not forget where we've come from moment. But I'll tell you what, the Trop, despite now having being given a shelf life, made itself heard in many ways this weekend. But we'll get to that in a little bit. But I think it's fun that the Trop was tropping a lot this weekend, on the weekend that we've been told we're going to finally move on. So, you know, I think it's really poetic and really nice. And it's just been a joy to follow the Rays and Rays baseball. And yeah, like you said, to go from the split city, all this Montreal talk, even those kind of guys in Orlando throwing around, trying to chomp at the franchise, to the Trop being, you know, destroyed and rebuilt. And Stu, I want to give credit to the owners, and I will not give credit to owners very often. But the executive team of the Rays had a really hard job to get this done, because Stu Sternberg had burned all the bridges. Like, he had burned the bridge with Tampa. He'd burned the bridge with St. Petersburg, as he almost had a stadium deal worked out with them. Very almost. Burned the bridge with them to the point where MLB kind of were lightly encouraging him to sell the team because there was no other option for him to negotiate with apart from moving the team out of the city. So for Zalupski's team to come in and broker a deal is in such a short turnaround, in essentially a year of ownership, to turn that around to get a city stadium in Tampa is, you know, really good work. And of course, they were much more willing to put money on the table than Stu Sternberg, but it was still a tough thing to do. And I'm glad that they came in and managed to generate a fresh start that got this deal done, because at the end of the day, the Rays fans needed the Rays in Tampa, and they got that done. And that will be their legacy, regardless of what happens to the team from here.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last thing I want to say about this before we move on to the games of this last week, there is now, in my opinion, no excuse to not get a Junior Caminero extension done as soon as possible. The stadium is locked up. We're in now. The price is only going up. He is on track to have a higher WAR season this season than he did last year with fewer home runs. So he is only becoming a more well-rounded player. I've said this before. I thought that the season, this age 23 season, is when we're going to start to see his true peak as a player, and that's next year. And so, if I am that ownership group and I am Eric Neander, priority one, hopefully we're not worrying about this until late October, but priority one, once the season ends, you have got to get his name on the dotted line for as long as he's willing to sign it for, to keep him in Tampa, because this team goes as he goes. It is built around him. You cannot have him being disgruntled. You just pay the man what he's worth, get a deal done. It is the most, now that the stadium is done, this is like so clearly has to be priority one this offseason.
I'm going to gush more about Junior later in the podcast. I'm going to get my bi-monthly Junior Caminero glaze sesh done in a minute. But so I'm going to leave it there, but I completely agree with you. And I want to talk more about Junior after, like, kind of when we talk about the games.
Awesome. Well, let's get right to it. Ray started out this last week with a series against Detroit and started out with a win that felt like, you know, hey, we got Rasmussen out there to start the game. This should be a win for us. But, you know, whenever you're on the road, whenever, you know, Drew has been not hit and miss. Hit and miss feels like a little bit too strong, but he's had a rough start here or there over the past month or so. So it was really nice to see him go out there and go six, only give it up one run, kind of leading the way for the pitching staff and allowing the offense, which got on the board right out of the gate in the top of the first, to get those four runs and let it be a fairly comfortable 4-1 victory.
Yeah. I feel this was like the prototypical Rays win here in 2026, yes, where the top of the lineup catches you early, and you score three runs. Your first three runs of the game are scored without ever a ball leaving the infield. Yeah. Basically, like Caminero grounds out for the first run to score, Randa grounds out for a second run to score, like Simpson bunts in a run, like. It's like the Rays just like, yeah, they just grind out a couple of manufactured runs, I guess the best way to put it, which is enough for Drew to go six. And then you go Clevinger, Emrod, welcome back Emrod, mm-hmm, by the way, and Brian Baker. And then bosh, jobs are good and 4-1 win. That's, if there was like a game where you go, how do the Rays win baseball games? You go, that's look, watch that game.
Yeah. And you mentioned it. Welcome back, Emrod. So important to see him coming back. And, you know, he's had three outings now, this first one in Detroit, and then he had two more outings against the Padres. Hasn't given up a run yet since his return. And so awesome to have him back and what that is going to do to support the Rays bullpen and how that's going to support the Rays pitching staff, along with something else that happens later on that's also very important for the Rays pitching staff. But Emrod coming back and looking the way he's looked is a huge first piece of solidifying the pitching staff. So very good to see that.
Yeah, his stuff still looks electric. He's been getting a lot of strikeouts since returning. Mm-hmm. His command still feels a bit erratic. I don't think that's fully all the way back yet. He's been given up the odd hit or the odd walk here and there. They've not been, yeah, like clean innings, which is what,
far.
Yeah. So we want to see that calm down, but he's just kind of getting back into the groove of things. I don't think his command's going to get worse as he goes along. So he's not quite at the peak Emrod that we saw in 2024, but the good thing is he's come back at the right time where he can kind of ramp up and be there by the end of September.
Yeah, which is, that's what we need from him, and it's been good to see that process starting. So, good start to the series. Now, the next game of the series was a story that we have seen a couple of times so far this season, where it's a game where you start out with Legumina, and then you go into Ian Seymour, and they combine for about three runs given up, and this version of it, Seymour gives up the three runs. But the good news is the two of them clear the game on their own. So you're not dipping into the bullpen, but they are giving up some runs. And unfortunately, the offense was not really able to do much this game. They Jackson, Job, and the rest of the Detroit bullpen just had something for them, and they just weren't really able to get anything going.
Yeah, just one of those days, like you said, they couldn't really get anything going. Tigers kind of, the thing is, they kind of really grinded away at Job. I don't think Job looked that good, but got out of trouble when he needed to. Got him out of the game before five innings had been pitched, but the bullpen kind of locked it down from there. The bullpen looked really good for the Tigers. So, and then the big thing was the Max Clark home run. Mm-hmm. That was kind of the deciding factor, really. It's one of those where, you know, giving up four runs is not a disaster, but when your offense fails to show up, then it kind of is. You kind of just shrug your shoulders at that one and go, ah, it's a shame. But, you know, I don't think anybody, I think the offense underperformed, which will happen, and the pitching did okay. It's fine.
I mean, one of the runs was technically unearned because there was an error in the game. But like Seymour going 5 2/3 and giving up three runs, that's kind of what I'm asking him to do. If he comes out and does that every time he's out there, I'm not too mad about that. I'd like to think the offense can put up more than three runs for the most part. It just has felt like, for whatever reason, the days that Seymour's gone out there, they haven't been able to. At least recently, not necessarily all season, but just recently it's felt that way. But also not a huge concern, no alarm bells from this game, just kind of a, hey, you're going to lose some type of game.
Yeah. And the thing I just said was after that game was like, hey, just win the series tomorrow. Like, yeah. As long as you win the series, it's fine.
And I think that this last game of this series was very important. And a big part of that is because this was the Peralta game. And Peralta has been a little bit, we talked about it last week, like we've seen some good things, but he hasn't really been able to pull it all together for a full start. And to close out the series, you'd like to get that series win on the road if you can. And, you know, can this guy who we brought in as someone that we expected to be a, you know, important piece of our rotation and kind of a bolstering piece, can he do that? And that is exactly what he did. Six innings pitched, only gave up two hits, no walks, four strikeouts, and just the best performance that we've seen from him as a Ray. And it came at an awesome time. The offense, you didn't light the world on fire, but got it started early in the second and did enough because the pitching staff was excellent because you went Peralta to Kelly two. Like, you know, shout out Kelly going two innings, giving up nothing, striking out one. And then Tyler Wells coming in and finishing it off. And it, like, you talked about the first game of this series being kind of a prototypical Rays win. This was a very dominant Rays win, specifically because of how dominant the pitching staff was.
Yeah, again, the runs felt a bit manufactured. Like, no kind of big blast. I don't think the Rays even hit a home run in the entire Detroit series. But I don't think they did. And, you know, I think Troy Melton, he's a hell of a pitcher. And he looks really good. But the Rays managed to get enough on him. And, yeah, Peralta. I want to have a quick word about Peralta because sometimes I can't believe this is it, but sometimes the obvious answer is the correct answer in baseball. Sometimes people try to overanalyze it. But when we all got Peralta, we all said, the Rays will just get him to throw his changeup more and he'll be really good. And do you know what he did this start compared to all of his other starts? He significantly increased the usage of his changeup and it was completely dominant. He got like 9 swing and misses on his changeup. He didn't get them all for strikeouts, but his changeup was just completely unhittable. And Peralta's always had a bit of a lively fastball, which he had a much better command of in this game. And they mentioned on the broadcast that they've been working on him, particularly with his lower half and keeping that less busy. So he's more streamlined to the plate, which has helped him command his fastball. So then when you've got a changeup that's as good as he has off an already above average fastball, that's the combo that'll get you through a lot of games. And, you know, the Rays are like completely leading into the changeup meta as a pitching staff this year. Pretty much all of their successful pitchers throw a good changeup this year. And they even went out to acquire pitchers with good changeups, like Peralta, obviously. But they also, in the offseason, got Nick Martinez, who throws an absolutely disgusting, one of the best changeups in baseball. Rasmussen's been throwing a changeup. McClanahan's been throwing a changeup more. Like, it's just been changeup, 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 which I think is really interesting that the meta is shifting. Where it used to be sweeper, the sweeper's the pitch, you know, get as much horizontal movement as possible. Now it's all about throwing off timing because hitters have got good at recognizing the sweeper. So they're like, okay, well, instead of getting as much break as possible, it's more now about upsetting timing. And the Rays are always one step ahead. Watch the Yankees, who have pretty good pitching lab, but they will lean on changeups next year, and the Dodgers will do it, and the league will lean on changeups next year, and just know that we tend to do these kind of things first.
Yeah, and really cool to see, you know, it's easy to just say, yeah, throw your changeup more, but the Rays obviously had to gain the confidence from Peralta to do that, and then he has to go out and execute it, because, like, nothing, you know, makes a great home run like a mislocated changeup that the hitter sees coming that he just pumps out of the stadium. And obviously that the locations were great from him. And the hope now is if he can solidify the rotation with another solid arm there, and then we've got Rodriguez cementing the bullpen with another solid arm there, Jack's hopefully coming back very soon, hope potentially even tomorrow with rosters expanding. We shall see. It's still not 100% clear what's going to happen there. We've got some ideas, but not 100%. But that may be the move. And if that is the move, then we kind of have the rotation and the bullpen fully set. And honestly, I'm very happy with how it looks right now. And he is kind of the last piece of that. So it was really awesome to see him pitch that way. And just a great way to close up Detroit.
Interesting that you brought up Griffin Jack's due back. I think there's a problem. When he comes back, currently we know that the front four of the rotation are going to be Rasmussen, Martinez, McClanahan, Peralta. Ian Seymour's been holding down the fifth spot and been doing it pretty well.
Yeah.
Does Griffin Jacks automatically get the spot back in the rotation, or do you think he will go to the bullpen and have to, like, re-earn it?
I think that Jacks goes back into the rotation because that's kind of what they've asked him to do. And I think Seymour, because he's already been used to coming out behind an opener, that's happened quite a bit, it's not that much of a adjustment for him to come out of the bullpen. And so I think that's probably what they're going to do. At least that's my expectation. Obviously, Jax has a lot of experience coming out of the bullpen as well, so they could do it either way. My expectation, though, is that Jax gets the spot back. And maybe the idea is Seymour gets some time to get comfortable coming out of the bullpen, because I think that's going to be his role in the postseason. So maybe this is some time for him to get used to that, going back to maybe a 2-3-inning sort of bridge guy role.
Or a reset button. Exactly.
Seeing him being comfortable there with the last couple of weeks of the season, that's my expectation, but we shall see.
Yeah, I know you like a reset button pitcher as well.
I do.
And Ian Seymour is a pretty good one to have as well.
Yeah. So, you know who I think would have really liked a reset button? Casey Mize in the first game of the Padres series. In one of the most, I mean, this was a bizarre series, just generally speaking, but a bizarre fourth inning that was basically all she wrote in this game, where the Rays scored 5 runs. And for a significant portion of the inning where all this was happening, they did not actually have a hit yet. It was a kind of a bunch of nonsense. It was a lot of fun to watch, though. And I did find myself feeling a little bad for Casey by the end of it. But by the end of it, the Rays came away with a 9-4 win to open up the Padres series.
Yeah. One of the Rays' strategies this season has been to put pressure on defenses. And they're really good at identifying teams that don't have good defenses. And they're going to show the world if the team has a bad, if their opponents have a bad defense, they're going to expose them. 1, through their speed. 2, through their ability to put the ball in play. And 3, with just general shenanigans, I think. And that we had a mix of all 3 in the fourth inning in that opening game. Xander Bogaerts, not a strong defender. Machado is a strong defender, but also can't move with the range that he used to. Who else have they got out of there? Ty France, kind of so-so. And then we know about, we'll talk about Taylor in the outfield a little bit later, but not a strong defensive team are the Padres. They're built more on their hitting. And they put the pressure on, and, like, you know, the guys that were causing the trouble, Mullins, Simpson, Mateo, Walls, all guys that can run really fast. How do you feel? I don't think we've talked about Jorge Mateo on this pod yet.
I mean, I think we discussed that he was on the team, but definitely haven't like given much thought to him because I think we're still not 100% sure what his role is going to be like going into the postseason. If he's, you know, obviously Ben Williamson, we hope to get back. So does Mateo have a spot on this team if Mateo or if Williamson is back and ready to play? I don't know. But I will say, for whatever it's worth, he has earned his spot over this last couple of weeks by being, you know, exactly what you want of a guy like him, where he's going to play. I would have liked his defense to be a little bit better. There's been some questionable moments here and there. Also been some really good plays. But he has been a pest on the bases. He's fast. He puts pressure on the defense the way that Simpson, Mullins, DeLuca, and Walls, whenever he puts the bat on the ball, can all do. And so it's just another – when you look at the way the Rays lineup is currently being constructed day in, day out, which is the way that I like it, where you've got Yandy, Aranda, Caminero, and then either Hicks or Valade, depending on the handedness of the opposing starting pitcher. Then you get into Simpson, DeLuca, Mullins, Mateo, Wall, some combination of those guys in some order. And it's just a bunch of speed and bunting, and you're never exactly sure what they're going to do when they get up to the plate. And it's just enough things that's going on in the pitcher's head to make it difficult. And that is exactly what we saw played out today. And I think it, again, goes back to Mateo has been able to come in here, and this is a credit to him, see what his role is and be willing to play his role exactly the way that the team wants him to do it. And not everybody, not every player is willing to do that. Not every player is willing to like maybe put down their pride a little bit and say, here's the role that they're wanting me to play. I'm going to accept that I'm not whatever I think I am or whatever I should be, but I'm going to play this role. And what he ends up doing is playing winning baseball. That's what they're asking him to do, and he's doing that. So he's got a spot on my roster. You know, we'll see what happens with Williamson and with some of the, you know, the junior as well, whenever he gets back, you know, how the Rays want to shuffle the roster. What are they going to do with Piper? Like, there's some stuff that we're still not sure of yet. But I have to say, obviously, we know what Mateo is. You know, he's not a like awesome player necessarily in the terms of he's like not a 4-win player or anything like that. But for what he is, he's done exactly what I would hope he would do.
Yeah. I think he's such a strong fit on this team. Like he fits so perfectly into what the Rays want from their players. And the kind of, like you said, the offense, weirdly he's played shortstop quite well, but whenever we put him at second, he seems to struggle. Yeah, weird. Yeah, I really have enjoyed Jorge Mateo. I think if he continues to play as he is, which is like kind of just above replacement, which is like all you want from your like utility infielder, right? If he continues to play it like a bit above replacement or even better, I would rather carry the guy that's been doing it for the past month over Williamson, a fresh Williamson who's been out. I think Mateo's hitting capabilities are better than Ben Williamson's. And he's faster. So I don't know, maybe I would take Mateo over Williamson going into the playoffs, but I think it's close.
I think that's going to have to be a conversation for as we get closer to the postseason. If Williamson is ready to go, I think we're going to have that conversation for sure.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's not an easy one.
I don't think so either. The next game in this series was if you just want to go see an entertaining baseball game, like just pop in the tape of this game. You had lead changes. You had weird stadium stuff going on. You had a comfort behind victory for the Rays when all seemed lost after another blow up by what has unfortunately been a usual suspect in that category that we did not expect in Clevinger. It was a game that Nick Martinez started, went 6, gave up 3. Not his best start, not his worst. We kind of move on from that. Clevinger comes in, cannot figure it out, can only get one out. Kelly comes in, some runs still score, but he gets out of it. And we're down a couple of runs going into the bottom of the 7th. And the Rays, as they have had so many times this season, when you thought they were done, they have an answer, and it ends in a Rays win 7-6.
Yeah, that seventh inning is nuts. I mean, on the build-up, it felt fairly routine. It was kind of blow for blow. Our big boys showing up. Liam Hicks drove in the first run, who's been outstanding
Yes.
since coming over to the Rays. Aranda, he's looking great. He clubbed a home run. That's a couple now that he's clubbed. And then Caminero hit a moonshot as well. He's hit a couple of moonshots lately, which is good to see him. So the big three are starting to really click again, which is lovely. But that seventh inning, the big two hits, the first one was absolute chaos because Diaz hit a single. And then there was like a
A
weird
long
error.
single. It was a long single to the wall, off the top of the wall. Not the quite the top, but like the maybe the upper half of the wall into the outfield.
So then a run scores, and then the second run's coming round, and then Luis Rengifo tore his knee while turning and throwing the ball, which allowed a couple more runs to score because he fell down when his knee buckled and threw the ball. So he threw it wild. Had to be escorted off. The game was tied. Like, what awful luck if you're a Padres fan.
Really tough.
Like, if you're a Padres fan, you go, man, it couldn't get be any worse. Our guy gets injured turning and throwing the ball. Like, that's brutal. Brutal stuff, but an insane break for the Rays. And then Chandler Simpson with a big two-run single, which he was hyped about,
Yes.
to take the lead, and then we have the 6-7 final.
6-7 final. You had another save from Baker. Just continues to put in insane work. That was his 39th save of the year, which is like, that's a lot of saves.
What's
39
the franchise
saves.
record for? I'm gonna give me a
That's,
second.
I think
I'm
it's
gonna have to find out.
47. I think it's 47, but I and that would have been
Was it Rodney or Colomé?
I think it was Rodney has 47, but I could be wrong about that.
Okay, so Rodney has 48. That
48.
was in
Okay.
his insane 2012
Yes.
season. Colomé did have a 47 save season in
Okay. All right.
2017. Rafael Soriano also had 45 in 2010. Shout out.
Doesn't get talked about enough, but he is he was legit as well.
He was really good. Brad Boxberger had a 41 save season.
That was what, 2016?
15, but yeah.
2015. Yeah, those were some those were some of those weird teams in kind of the in between before this current sort of era of Rays baseball. But there's a lot of fun names. Brad Boxberger is a fun name
Yeah,
from
shout out
that era.
Brad Boxberger. Sergio Romo was picked, got 25 one year. But the that was a great. I love Sergio Romo on the Rays, by the way.
Yes.
But yeah, Baker's currently seventh on the single season save for the Rays. He needs eight to tie Rodney. Nine,
We sh
nine.
we shall see. We shall see if he can do it. I think he's gonna get the chance, I would say. They haven't, they've definitely not been, they have been, they are not scaling back his usage at all. Like that he is getting used in every just about every opportunity. And he seems to be up for it every single night. So he didn't get the save in the last game of the series because he came in the, I believe that was the 10th inning he came in with hope, which this last game of this series, man, I mean, just pandemonium is the only way that I can describe this game. Started out with a pretty good start from Drew, 6 innings, 2 earned runs, 6 strikeouts. Kind of business as usual. The bullpen locks it down for the rest of the game, but it looked like going into the ninth, you know, we're down 3-1 at the time going into the ninth inning, and that's Mason Miller time, and that's usually closing time. That's the end of that. Mason Miller comes in, the dude like is basically invincible. It seems like he'd only blown one other save on the entire year up to this point. So normally you just pack it in. But Johnny DeLuca with other ideas hits a ball that probably wouldn't have been a home run if it was untouched, but it was touched and it was dropped over the 315, basically like right over the 315 marker down there in the corner for a home run that just led to extra innings where nobody scores in the 10th, and the Padres get a run in the 11th, and then the Rays, in dramatic fashion, as they had just done like the previous day and had done a couple of times over this last week, win in dramatic fashion with Jorge Mateo, who we were just talking about, hitting a laser beam to the outfield to walk it off. Rays win 5-4.
Yeah, a lot happened in this game. The trop was tropping. We didn't mention that Xander Bogaerts hit a ball 110 miles an hour off the bat earlier in the series, but hit the catwalk, so it just became a pop-out to third. And then we had this moment where in Longoria's landing over there, proving to be a miracle home run area once again. So the trop was really showing all its colors. We also want to shout out friends of the show, Sandy and Carter, who were there.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, 319 feet is the official distance on DeLuca's home run, which is one of the shorter home runs that you'll see, but it probably didn't even go that far, actually, because that counts the bounce, the ricochet, and the probably two steps that Taylor traveled with the ball in his glove before he dropped it over the fence. Really unfortunate. I know it's easy to say with hindsight. Taylor needed to bring his arm in as soon as he caught it. So even if he crashed into the wall, that ball, the most it's going to do if it drops out the glove is just land, and then it would just be like a double for DeLuca instead. Right. But he keeps his arm up, and therefore he kind of like dunks it over the wall.
Literally dunked it over the wall.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Like, the odds of that, I don't think we'll ever see that again.
Unlikely.
Not off the best closer in MLB by a while.
Unlikely.
And yeah, to tie the game in the 9th inning, that's for sure. So that was one in a million to begin with. Junior also hit another moonshot this game. And then in the 11th, I think it's worth noticing that there was a controversial call as well that saw Fernando Tatis and Craig Stammen get ejected from the game because there was a bunt that Tatis kind of beat out, but the throw was wild, so he got to second, but then they called him out because he was off the baseline. Do you think that was the correct call?
I mean, it's one of those things where it looks bad when you're watching it in like, if you're just watching the game and you're not really like paying super close attention to what's happening, it looks like, what are you talking about? How is he out? But if you watch the replay, he pretty clearly goes into the grass. You can't do that. You're not allowed to go into the grass. You have that entire lane.
And he was there the whole time.
He was there, and he ran over there. He knew the pitcher was coming off the mound to get the ball. It is pretty clearly a decision consciously he made, maybe unconsciously trying to maybe get in the way of the ball a little bit. Bad throw from the pitcher. I'm forgetting who was pitching at that point. Was it Drew still pitching at that point? I can't remember who was pitching.
I think it was Boozer.
Was it? No, it was Boozer. You're right. It was Boozer. Boozer over. Bad throw. And it just is clearly that's the rule. Like it feels bad and looks bad to, you know, if you don't know the rule, but that's just the rule. You can't run in the grass. You just can't.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't even mind if they do what they do in like Little League or college. I think they do it in as well, where they have that extra bag,
the orange bag on the side. I don't really know what the downside to that is. Like, it's probably a whole other conversation. I don't really know why you wouldn't do that. Like, if you just want to say that maybe like somebody's gonna like trip it, hurt them. I don't know what the reason. Because it's not what we're used to, or they don't like the way it looks. I don't know. But like, I mean, and that honestly, I genuinely think that the reason is probably aesthetics. It just would look weird. And the people don't, and they like their sky shot over the stadium with the little white squares. And it's sort of what we are used to.
Yeah.
But for the safety perspective, there's literally, I can't see any reason why you wouldn't do that.
Right. I'm with you. So they get ejected. May have factored in at the end. Maybe I can't remember.
You would have liked to have had Tatis later in the game.
So Bowen, who came in for Tatis, he went 0-for-1 in extras. So
struck out.
Yeah. So could have done with him. But yeah, the play in the 11th was a chopper by DeLuca to Bogarts, who had a play, I think. I think it would have been close, but he had a play at the plate and he bobbles it, testing defense again. And then that gave Mateo the... And I do wonder about that base hit. If I know sometimes it's considered good manners if a player hits a ball that would be like easily the game-winning sack fly, like, you know, it's deep enough. Like, sometimes it's good manners that a fielder just lets it drop and let them have the single, because they're like, hey, I'll help my friend out and get the stat, because there's no point in giving them the sack fly when they can just have the hit. It'll be the game regardless. I don't know if Taylor just did that or if he genuinely misplayed it, but either way, David Morgan was, I don't know if I'm allowed to say the words that he was, but he was full of urine. Yeah.
He was displeased.
Urine and vinegar.
Yeah. And I mean, some of that, I will say, like, it was a rough series for the Padres, getting swept. I'm sure that's not a good feeling to see that, to feel like, you know, like, hey, at least try to make the play, at least let us have a throw home. Because, I mean, I'm pretty sure that there was one out. So, like, if you somehow catch that and then somehow, let's see, who was that? Kenny Piper slips on his way home, then you get the out. Like, I do think, though, that was a well-struck ball. I genuinely think that just got over his head. Like, I think they were playing in and that ball was hit really hard. It just got over his head. It's what it looked like to me.
Yeah. And for the Padres, yeah, two of those three games had awful luck involved, where they narrowly lost because of a guy tearing his knee mid-play. And the other game was because of that DeLuca home run, essentially, which is... And if the Padres had won any of those three games, they'd be in a playoff spot right now. But right now, they're currently not in the playoffs as things stand. So I could totally imagine the Padres are like smashing their heads off a wall. But all that matters if you're the Rays is 3 out of 3, gain a game on the Yankees.
Yes.
Really good shape heading into September.
Yeah. And I really don't know that we could have asked for a better week of baseball than we got from the Rays. And there's a couple of players that I think need to be specifically recognized for their contributions to this week in one of my favorite segments that we do, and that's Batten Arm of the Week.
Let's start with Arm of the Week, Zach. You can give that one.
Yes, with pleasure. It is we talked about him already. You gave a very nice little write-up on his use of the changeup in a very critical start to kind of give him some confidence going forward. It's Freddy Peralta. We're so happy to see him get a start like that. 6 innings pitched, no runs given up, only 2 hits given up, and no walks, 4 strikeouts. Just really, really good stuff from Peralta. I'm so important for him to get a start like that as we go into the postseason. And I was just honestly like, I honestly wouldn't have cared if we had lost that game. Just to get a start like that from Peralta, I mean, obviously we won, which is great, but to get a start like him, or just get a start like that from him, is so critical for this team going forward. He's the arm of the week. Shout out to Drew as well, who had a great week, but Peralta, just a critical start from him. He's the arm of the week.
Yeah. And you know what? It's tough to lose a game when you throw 6 shutty. And if this is the form that Peralta is going to round into for the second half, what a rotation we have for the playoffs.
Oh, for sure.
Games, because you need 3, maybe 4 in a playoff series. Mm-hmm. And we've got him if Peralta's there. So really exciting. Love that as well. Just the other option is like, you know, Jax or Seymour, right? Whichever one doesn't take the 5th spot would have taken Peralta's spot. And neither of those guys are guys that are going to give you length. So the fact that he helps like take the pressure off a bullpen as well when we're trying to save bullpen bullets can't be quantified, but it's really important. Shout out Freddy Peralta, man. Really good week. Legumina had a good week. Boozer continues to be good. Like, there's the Rays pitching staff is kind of really clicking right now.
Yeah, and Baker still continues to be awesome as well. It's the Rays can pitch that we always knew. You know, there were some times this season where we had some questions here and there about the bullpen, about the starting pitching staff, but I think we always had confidence because they've always rewarded our confidence every year that I've been watching them. So they've earned much more confidence with another rounding into form season. Pat, can you give us our bat of the week?
Yeah, I promised at the start of the show that I would do a little, like, I probably do this every other episode, a quick little praise of Junior Caminero. I'm doing it again. He's our bat of the week. And, you know, there was a bit of a time, I would say, in early August where it felt like all three of the big three in our lineup were a little off it. And now they've all kind of rounded into form. Diaz has looked great the past couple of weeks. Aranda's had a good week. But Junior is... found the home run swing again. He went quite a while without hitting a home run, and now he's hit two absolute tape measure shots this week. Mm-hmm. And is also continuing to just get hits as well. Batted 409 this week. And also the defense continues to be good from him. 0.4 FWAR accrued this week. Really so important to this lineup. And I think something that is really understated about Junior and hasn't been talked about enough is that Yandy's the clear captain of the team unofficially. Junior knows that Yandy's got maybe this year, maybe next year, and then someone's going to need to step up. He's already kind of taken the reins, I think, as the next guy to step up. He is always there with positive energy, encouraging the team. He plays with huge passion. You can never question how much he wants every play, how much he wants every at bat. And he battles out there for this team, and he's a joy to watch. And the final thing I want to mention, which I also don't think has been given a lot of love, Junior has played every single game this season. Every single one. And that doesn't happen very often. There's usually like... it's usually single figures of the amount of players across MLB that play in every single game. And they're usually first baseman or DH. And Junior's doing it from the hot corner. If he plays all 162, and I think he'll fight to do that, that's a huge achievement in itself, especially when he's as valuable a player as he is with the bat. To have him in the lineup every day is unbelievable. And, you know, the best ability is availability, right? I don't even know who the last Rays player was to play all 162 games in a season. I think we're going to be going back a while. So huge shout out to Junior. He's only 0.3 FWAR from eclipsing last season's totals. He's probably on track to be a 5-win player. And he's probably going to be a finalist for MVP.
Yeah, I mean, I think he wants to play 162. I don't know if this was the last person in a Rays uniform to do it, but I do know that Evan Longoria hit 162 at least once in his career, and I believe he hit 163 other times while in a Rays uniform. So he was he had some injuries, but when he wasn't injured, he was out there every day. And I think that is kind of what Junior wants to be for this team. And I don't know that we can ever really express enough just how much he means to this team. Considering the circumstances that the franchise was in after a previous franchise player seemingly put this franchise backwards, for him to come in and been able to do what he's been able to do is just, I mean, it's impossible to put into words. He's at 4.8 B war on the season. So he's going to hit 5 B war for sure. Most likely going to hit 5 F war as well. I think he's at 4.3 for F war. So most likely going to be a 5 war player in both. Going to get MVP votes. Could potential. I think he's a very strong candidacy for the Silver Slugger award for third base for the season. A very high probability of getting that. He is the franchise, and I don't know the franchise could be in better hands than in the hands of Junior Caminero.
Yeah. And like you said, extend him now.
Now. Like right
for whatever
now.
Whatever it costs.
While we're talking, it should be happening. We should be talking about it right now. We need to get that. Obviously, we're in the middle of the year, so probably doesn't want to be talking about that. But like the moment the season ends, the first piece of paper that Junior Caminero should see once the season has ended, should be a contract for however much money he needs to be in Tampa forever. I don't care. Because
during,
he's going to be
during the World Series trophy lift. Make him
it could
it.
Be happening. Like, literally, like, he could be putting the trophy down and picking up the pen. That's what should be happening.
Wouldn't that be insane?
Wouldn't that be sick if he, like, signed an extension at the at like the parade for like for the championship? Wouldn't that be I don't know. Maybe that's too corporate. I just feel like that would be sick.
I would cry. I would cry real tears. Yeah. So I had a quick search while you were saying all that. Apparently, it's happened three times in Rays history that someone's played 162. Longoria did it in 2014. Delmon Young did it in 2007. And Aubrey Huff did it in 2003.
Okay.
But well, Longoria and Young did Longoria, it, most importantly. Yes.
We like those two. and maybe soon, Junior Caminero. I would love it. It would be fun. You know, I love a complete game. I'm a Cal Ripken enjoyer, even though he played against the Rays. Did he play against the Rays?
Surely at least a couple
times. Maybe one or two. I don't know. That's another interesting question. But all that to say, Junior's awesome. And we hope to see some more fireworks from him tonight as we start the series against the Mets. A interesting week. We play the Mets at home, then go immediately without a day off to Texas to play the Rangers for four. Would love to win this series at home. Would love a sweep, but a series win will be okay. Just split in Texas. Texas is weird. Split in Texas and get home. That's all I'm worried about.
I'm receiving word from our producer that Cal Ripken hit his 400th career home run against the Devil Rays in 1999. Yeah.
Well, he did. I guess he did. Cal Ripken is like one of my personal goats. I love Cal Ripken.
I think he played till 2001, and he was with the Orioles, right? So he would have played up a few times. But yeah, big week ahead. The Mets is a series, like you said, you want to take advantage of. I think Ian Seymour's lined up to pitch the bulk, whether that's as a starter or most likely as a after Legomena opening. But then you got Peralta pitching against his old team. That'll be fun. And then Shane should be finishing that off. And then we got the Martinez-Rasmussen 1-2 punch to open the Texas series. So that'll be fun. But we are going to run into DeGrom. I think he's set to pitch game three of the Texas series. Scary times.
It'll be fun to watch.
And we have struggled with Texas just forever. So
we've always had trouble out there. So get a split. We're actually not going home. We're going to Atlanta next after that to play the Braves, who are not – but that's going to be – I mean, that's getting into the week after this next week. But that'll be a tough series. The Braves have rounded into form very nicely in the back half of the year. So that'll be tough. It's not going to be the easiest end of the season. The only series after – and it's really not – like even the Athletics, that's no longer a gimme. The A's are a real baseball team. Like the A's are no longer a gimme. And then you got the Red Sox who are going to be fighting for playoffs. You got the Yankee series, obviously. We got some important series closing out the year. But the Rays have put themselves in the best possible position you could ask for. Up 4.5 games on the Yankees. Hopefully we can take care of business against the Mets, win these games, and get on to the postseason.
With a good week, the Rays, we could be talking next week about the Rays being like this close to clinching a playoff spot. And if we get the division, which we've got a ways to go to do that still, that's not a gimme at all. But if the Rays do get the division, you won't believe this stat. I had to double check this stat. We'll have had as many AL East division wins as the Yankees since 2013.
How about that?
I could not believe when someone told me the Yankees have only won the AL East three times since 2013. But apparently that's true.
It's been a tumultuous division. And listen, like the Orioles could sneak in the playoffs. Like this is a tough division, and like there's a real world where the wild cards are Yankees, Red Sox, Orioles. And you get a four AL East teams in the playoffs, which has happened, I think, at least once before. Or maybe it almost happened. I can't remember.
Blue Jays right there too.
Yeah, Blue Jays could do it as well. I mean, it's crazy out there. But the Rays have managed to put themselves kind of above that fray thankfully, and given us a lot less to worry about. And what we really have to be worrying about is, can we win a division and can we set ourselves up for a bye? And we're going to be covering all of that, and we hope that you will join us when we do that. We appreciate you all spending some time with us, talking some Rays ball. If you got any thoughts, let us know in the YouTube comments. We'd love to hear from you guys. Follow and subscribe on whatever platform you enjoy the show on, so you know when we're going live, so you know that you can join the conversation. And hopefully this time next week we will be conversating about maybe clinching a playoff spot or almost clinching a playoff spot. But whether we've clinched it by that point or whether we're still fighting for it, it's going to be Rays up.
Rays up.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLI Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.